Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're diving into something you probably do every day, driving.
Right.
And we want to shift how you think about it. Because look, for ages, the chat about fuel efficiency, it's all been about the car, hasn't it?
Absolutely. The engine, the tech, the shape, the tires.
Exactly. But what if the biggest factor for saving fuel isn't under the hood? What if it's, well, between your ears?
It's kind of funny how we separate the tech from the person using it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We pour millions into engineering the perfect car, but then we kind of ignore the driver, the most flexible and sometimes, let's be honest, the most irrational part of the whole equation.
That's it. That's where the hidden savings are often hiding.
Yeah, definitely.
So this deep dive, we're going into territory that honestly doesn't get talked about much with fuel use.
Yeah.
We're exploring behavioral economics.
Yes. The psychology of decision making.
Right. How those mental shortcuts, those biases we all have, how they're secretly emptying your tank and, well, your wallet.
It's not just about saving a few cents here and there either. It's really about seeing how our own minds work in a really practical way, impacting our daily costs, even our environmental footprint.
Think of this as mind over mileage, becoming a fuel hacker.
I like that. Fuel hacker.
Okay, so let's start with a big one, the anchoring effect.
Okay.
This is, you know, our tendency to just grab onto the first piece of info we get.
And let it influence everything else.
I was right.
Even if it's not really relevant anymore.
Exactly. So how does this actually play out when you're driving?
Well, think about when you first got your car. You saw the sticker, right? The official MPG rating. Let's say it was 30 MPG.
Okay.
That number. That becomes your anchor. Even if you personally, with your driving style, only ever get, say, 25 MPG.
You're still judging yourself against that 30.
Subconsciously, yeah. Or, another classic example, gas prices. Maybe last week it was $3.50.
Right.
Now it's $3.55. Mm-hmm. That tiny 5-cent jump feels huge, disproportionately so.
Oh, yeah. You feel that gut punch.
Exactly. Because you're anchored to the $3.50. And what happens? You might start driving all over town, searching for a slightly cheaper station.
Burning more gas than you'd actually save.
Precisely. Our brains get stuck on that first number. Reality changes, but the anchor often stays put.
It's so true. Okay, let's make this concrete. We looked at this with a commuter. Let's call her Sarah.
Okay.
Drove the exact same 20 miles every day, and she was convinced, absolutely convinced, she was already being efficient.
But she was anchored.
Totally anchored. Her routine was clockwork. Floor it, get up to speed, slam on the brakes for the light, repeat.
Ah, the classic fast but stop-start approach.
Yeah, her anchor was this idea of a fast commute, even though all that accelerating and braking probably wasn't saving much time at all.
Her feeling of speed was driving her actions, not the actual clock. She was optimizing for a sensation.
You nailed it. So we gave Sarah this this challenge. Sounds a bit silly, but it worked. We called it the smooth flow challenge.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
The challenge was, drive like you have a full glass of water on your dashboard. And you absolutely cannot spill it.
Okay. I see where this is going. It forces a different kind of awareness.
Exactly. What's the behavioral science angle on that?
Well, it's basically tackling something called present bias. Our brains want the reward now. So hitting the accelerator hard feels faster. It gives that immediate sense of action.
Right. The instant gratification.
But the glass of water forces you to think longer term. You have to anticipate stops, accelerate gently, decelerate smoothly. It makes you prioritize the actual goal, smooth, efficient travel, over that short-term impulse to just go.
You're overriding the need for speed feeling.
You're consciously mitigating that present bias, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Focusing on the sustained action rather than the immediate jolt.
So did this smooth flow thing actually work for Sarah? What happened?
The results were pretty striking, actually. Her average miles per gallon, it jumped by 15%.
15.
Wow, okay. That's significant. And the commute time, did she lose a lot of time being so careful? That's the kicker. She arrived just 3 minutes later than usual.
Hmm.
3 minutes.
No way.
It just shows how much fuel we can waste chasing an illusion of speed, doesn't it? That lost time she might have worried about. Mostly in her head.
Incredible. Okay, let's shift gears. Another big one from behavioral economics. Loss aversion.
Yes, a cornerstone. The pain of losing is much stronger than the pleasure of gaining.
Absolutely. Finding $20 is nice. Losing $20 feels awful. Way more intense.
Mm-hmm. And you really see this with driving. The second that low fuel warning light comes on.
Oh, the dreaded light. Instant panic.
Totally. Suddenly, the thought of losing fuel, of running out,
yeah.
It creates this huge psychological pressure.
And that pressure makes you do dumb things.
It can, yeah. Like maybe speeding to the nearest gas station, even if it's way overpriced, or taking some weird detour because you're terrified of getting stranded. The fear of the loss overrides rational decision making.
You're just trying to avoid that awful feeling of being stuck.
Right. Making a financially worse choice just to avoid the potential loss.
So how do you hack that? How does the fuel hacker deal with the low fuel light panic?
It's about a mental switch, a reframing. Instead of obsessing over the empty part of the tank,
Which triggers the panic.
exactly,
Yeah.
you deliberately focus on the full part, which you still have.
So instead of, oh no, I'm almost empty, it's, okay, I still have a quarter tank.
Precisely. It sounds simple, maybe even a bit trivial, but it shifts your mindset from scarcity to, well, sufficiency.
Cut calms the panic
It
down.
lets the rational part of your brain, the prefrontal cortex, take back control from the panicked lizard brain.
Okay, so you're calmer. What does that allow you to do?
It allows you to make a better decision. Maybe you check your app, see there's a cheaper station just half a mile further down the road. Instead of panic pulling into the first expensive one, you can calmly choose the better option.
You move from being reactive to being strategic.
That's a great way to put it. More strategic, less driven by that immediate fear of loss.
All right, one more concept for today. This one's really interesting. The endowment effect.
The it's mine, therefore it's better effect.
Pretty much. We value things more, sometimes way more, just because we own them. Could be a coffee mug, could be your driving style.
Absolutely. Think about how people talk about their way of driving.
Yeah, that's just how I drive.
Right. Even if data, like their terrible fuel economy, shows it's inefficient, there's this emotional attachment. It's their style, the one they've always used.
So they overvalue it.
They do.
Yeah.
That sense of ownership makes it feel inherently right, or maybe just comfortable. It's familiar. Changing it feels like giving up a part of themselves almost.
Like a loyalty to your own bad habits.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It's wrapped up in identity sometimes. I'm a fast driver, or I'm a cautious driver. Breaking that mold is harder than just learning a new technique.
So if our habits feel like, well, like us, how do we get past that? How do we overcome the endowment effect to drive better?
It takes asking a different question. Instead of thinking, how do I usually drive my car?
Which reinforces the ownership.
Right. You need to ask, setting aside my habits, what would the best possible way to drive this route be? Or how can I operate this vehicle most effectively, regardless of how I've done it before?
So detaching yourself from the my way bias.
Exactly. It's about being open to the idea that your way might not actually be the optimal way, even if it feels comfortable and familiar. It's aiming for objective effectiveness over subjective attachment.
Okay, so pulling all this together, what's the big picture here? The main thing we want you, the listener, to walk away with.
I think it's this. Getting better fuel efficiency isn't just about the car's hardware. It's fundamentally a human challenge.
It's about our own minds.
Right. If you start to recognize your own biases, like where you might be anchored, or how loss aversion kicks in when the tank gets low, or how you might be endowed to your old driving style.
Just recognizing them is the first step.
It is. And once you see them, you can start to consciously counteract them. And that unlocks savings and efficiency that, honestly, no fancy gadget or new car model alone can give you.
It's really about becoming a more aware driver, a more mindful driver,
A fuel hacker.
a fuel hacker, yeah. So the journey to saving fuel, to driving smarter, it doesn't start with upgrading your car. It starts with upgrading your mindset.
Well said.
Yeah.
It really does start in your head.